Remember those days? Welcome in to another episode of Locked On Rockets. I'm your host, Ben Dubose. That voice, of course, is that of John Paul Stephenson, Rockets PA announcer. This was actually the intro of Dwight Howard to the 2014 playoffs, his first postseason with the Rockets. That was when the legend of hashtag playoff Dwight was born. Now, of course, that's no more, at least in Houston. Dwight opted to leave after his third season with the team. He's now a member of the Atlanta Hawks. And while we certainly wish him well, Dwight was a tremendous asset both in the locker room and especially in the Houston community during his time in Houston. At the same time, watching his career the rest of the way is going to be interesting. I think a lot of Rockets fans have a vested interest in Dwight and how it turns out. And I think there's a lot of interest also in kind of learning how things turn so quickly. You know, this time last year, as we sat here in July 2015, I don't think anyone really believed that Dwight Howard had that much of a shot at leaving Houston after year three, because after the first 2 years, things seemed so positive. Even though he was going to opt out for salary cap reasons, after two 54 and 56 win seasons, the latter going to the Western Conference Finals, and him being a dominant playoff performer in both, you know, I think everyone expected him to be in Houston for a really long time. He embraced the community, and the community embraced him. Unfortunately, there were a lot of things that went wrong in year three and led to just sort of an unraveling of the relationship between Dwight and the Rockets, at least from a basketball fit standpoint. So to kind of talk about that, I'm going to have Brad Rowland, the Locked On Hawks writer and podcaster, on the show, and we're going to go over basically what happened with Dwight as he left Houston, and also what Hawks fans can look forward to as now they have Dwight Howard for the next 3 years. So hold on, and I'm going to get Brad on the phone for us.
Thanks for coming on, Ben. How's it going, man?
Going pretty well, Brad. How are you?
I'm doing very well. We are, of course, here to talk about Dwight Howard, so without wasting much time, we can jump right in. Things have been interesting in Atlanta with Dwight. I would say he's been very agreeable, very willing to mold himself to Atlanta's organizational culture, something that a lot of us have been worried about, but Dwight's kind of saying all the right things in the lead-up, kind of posting some, you know, positive videos, that kind of stuff. I guess the simplest way to ask this is, are you buying this this attitude change, this personality change from Howard? Are you buying it as someone who's seen it up close the last couple of years?
Partially. The one thing to keep in mind, I'm not so much buying the interviews. Dwight's always been tremendous with the media. I wouldn't necessarily call it a personality change because he's always said the right things. He knows what he needs to work on. He genuinely is a hard worker, a good guy in the community, that kind of stuff. where things really might be different in Atlanta is with the organizational culture. You know, Coach Budenholzer is obviously well-respected around the league, and you hope that trickles in. The reason I say partially is because the thing with Dwight, there's an underlying current that kind of runs through every team and system he's been through, which is that, you know, he's a monster in the pick and roll game. He's one of the best roll men in the NBA, yet he prefers the traditional post-up usage. He wants his touches in the post. And throughout the course of his career, it's kind of been how many post touches do we have to give him to keep him happy and engaged versus, you know, how many is just too much to where it's detrimental to the team? Because over the course of his career, he's been an average at best post player, and that's declined a lot the past couple of years. I'll buy in because I want to believe in Dwight. I think he's a good guy. I think he means well. I think the biggest change that happened over his 3 years in Houston was from a physical standpoint. The guy, when he arrived in 2013, compared to who he is now, they don't really resemble each other that much. Dwight, of course, when he arrived in 2013, was coming off the back surgery a year and a half prior. But then in the middle of that, he also had an ongoing knee issue that was basically cartilage wearing down. He described his knee as bone on bone. And of course, you add in addition to that, 11 seasons in the NBA. So just a natural wear and tear. And so basically the Dwight you have now doesn't have the springs, the ups that he did. Obviously not in Orlando, but not even his first couple of years in Houston. And that's fine. He's still a very intelligent player, a productive player. I'd point to plenty of others, including Tim Duncan, you know, big men who just with, you know, their strength and intelligence were able to play deep into their 30s, and Dwight might can as well. But I think it was difficult for him in Houston because you know, what limited post game he had on offense was related to his athleticism. And as that went, I think it was, you know, his post game became a negative for the team. But at the same time, with it being the same setting, the same team that where he had starred just 2 to 3 years earlier, I think it was tough for him to, you know, accept a different role, a changed setting. And so that's where I think Atlanta, you know, it's a fresh start. It's a team with a strong organizational culture in place. I think you might have a better shot at getting him to buy in than the Rockets did, especially the Rockets with J.B. Bickerstaff, you know, a 36-year-old interim coach in his first go-round. That was not the best recipe for getting Dwight Howard to accept a new role.
Yeah, I'm glad you mentioned that. It was something I was going to ask you was as how you think he will how you think he will face a new, more established coach in Mike Budenholzer. Howard's kind of gone out of his way to kind of praise Budenholzer in every interview that he's done, and Budenholzer's done the same going back to Howard in that same way. I know these guys have talked previously. They kind of discussed the fact that the Hawks tried to get him the last time he was a free agent.
Yep.
And I think it'll be interesting to see. But I generally agree with you. I'm kind of taking the wait and see approach on Howard in terms of whether he's going to be, as you mentioned, willing to play that pick and roll aspect more so than the getting all the post touches that he's always seemed to want.
Yeah, see, the interesting thing, people point to when he made the decision to join the Rockets back in July 2013, everyone thought that Kevin McHale was a great coach for him. And in some way he was. You know, Kevin McHale is one of the best big men of all time in regards to his footwork. And that's one thing that Dwight, in regards to his post offense, has always been kind of lacking, at least lacking relative to what you'd like to see, given how dominant he can be in other facets of the game. And so people said, you know, they put two and two together. Dwight's weakness was McHale's strength, and they thought that these two could, you know, work really well together. And I don't think they worked poorly together. However, it wasn't the perfect marriage that everyone made it out to be, because the thing with Kevin McHale, he was a good coach overall, but he was a player's coach. Kevin McHale, for his two-plus seasons with Dwight Howard with the Rockets, you know, he's your prototypical CEO type. Think Scott Brooks when he was in Oklahoma City. That's a fair model for kind of how McHale ran operations here in Houston. And so while that might have been good for Dwight on a technical level, you know, Dwight could talk to McHale in practices and, you know, look at a drop step, certain moves. From a system standpoint, he was not particularly hands-on. And so when you don't have a, you know, defined system, I think that makes it easier for players to drift into, you know, their preferred mode, which for Dwight, of course, when things go poorly, he thinks he should be a dominant post player. He wants more touches in the post. And so without a strong system in place, I think it's easier for him. And this was even going back to when McHale was in place, easier to devolve into that mindset. What I'm really intrigued to see, for the first time since really his days with Stan Van Gundy in Orlando, you're going to have Dwight with a coach, with a clear culture, with a clear system. Now, of course, I know Mike D'Antoni has a system, even though D'Antoni and Dwight were oil and water. They worked together in Los Angeles, and now D'Antoni's in Houston. But, you know, the season that Dwight and D'Antoni were in Los Angeles, D'Antoni came in midseason. He had no chance to implement that system with that Lakers team. That was, you know, destined to be a train wreck. With Budenholzer, you have a guy that's been there for multiple years. And so it intrigues me. I don't know it for sure, but if Dwight would buy in more to the pick and roll system, if there's ever a scenario where it could happen, I think Atlanta is the place that it could.
Yeah, that's the big question, is whether he's, you know, first of all, willing. And second of all, even if he is willing, there are some questions, at least that I have, about Howard's fit in general. Even if he was to play the exact way that they want him to play,
sure,
it's going to be very different for Atlanta to have a center, you know, as their, you know, go-to interior threat that is a non-shooter. For the longest time, they've had Al Horford for almost a decade. And under Mike Budenholzer, you know, the great majority of the time, I would say, the Hawks were playing with five shooters on the court. And now with Howard, you have to assume he's going to be a focal point of the offense, because it's one of the reasons why you pay him that kind of money. But
sure,
in the same breath, it's going to have to be a lot of pick and roll for him to be effective, especially given the fact that Dennis Schroeder is taking over at point guard. And, you know, he's also not a great shooter. So
right. Those
two guys are going to be an interesting pick and roll marriage. I think that's a potentially devastating marriage if everything fits together well. But on the periphery, it will definitely be interesting to see if Howard is A, willing to do that, and B, whether it works, even if he is willing to do that.
Yeah, I think it can work. Like I said, when he bought in with James Harden in that pick and roll, it was a lethal combination. The key is just going to be, does he buy into the system, and can you get him enough post touches to keep him happy and engaged? You know, speaking of the Hawks, I was thinking about, you know, kind of how things devolved for Dwight Howard in Houston, because really it was an interesting year going into 2015-2016, which ended up being his last season in Houston. No one in Houston realistically believed that that would be his last year with the Rockets. Everything went very well the first 2 years with Dwight. They won 54 and 56 games. The second year, you know, they advanced to the Western Conference Finals. The only team that beat him, of course, was the eventual NBA champion Warriors. And so the vibes were really positive. Dwight was a good guy in the locker room. He was well established in the community in Houston. And, you know, the pieces never really fit this past year. That's why they slipped from being 30 games over 500 to a, you know, 41 and 41-8 seed. And one of the games that it really stood out that you could see that things were changing in a hurry, there was a Rockets-Hawks game right before New Year's in Houston. I don't know if you remember this, but
absolutely.
The Rockets had a 15 to 20 point lead. I forgot. They had a pretty big first half lead, and they ended up blowing it and losing the game. And the biggest X factor in that game for the Hawks, Al Horford hit 6 or 7 threes, just a ridiculous amount. What ended up happening, every one of them, Dwight was fairly disengaged. He refused to come out to the perimeter, and Horford just had a field day. Horford spotted it, the Hawks spotted it, and he took advantage. And that's the kind of thing, the first 2 years with Dwight never happened. And part of it might be physical. Certainly there's a toll with, you know, coming out to the perimeter for a big man. And Dwight's, you know, in the latter stages of his career, he's in his 30s now, 10 plus seasons. And so you do worry about that. But I think the bigger factor, you know, that was when the team had gotten off to a bad start. Everyone was kind of disenchanted, and you saw him just becoming disengaged at times. And I think of that Rockets-Hawks game as one of the flagship moments where you think, man, I don't know if this is going to work out here. And so that's what you're constantly going to be fighting is, you know, and it's going to be Mike Budenholzer's job is, can you keep him engaged and on the straight and narrow buying in? Because if you can, and I thought the Rockets did a lot of that the first 2 years with Dwight, he's still got a lot left in the tank. It's just a question of him being consistently engaged and him consistently buying into the system.
Yeah, absolutely. I think one of my worries is exactly that. If things don't go well early, I think, you know, the first, you know, 10, 20, 30 games, I think Howard will be a pretty easy sell, again, in a new situation under a coach that kind of has the command of the franchise, the command of the team on the court. But if things don't go well, and I think that one of my fears is that they won't go well, not only because of Howard, but because of some of the other moves the Hawks have made, whether Howard kind of punts at that point in time. That's one of my worries as someone who wasn't the biggest fan of the acquisition. But yeah, that's certainly something to keep in mind. We talked a little bit about the defense without actually talking about it. I think one of the things that Hawks fans are expecting from Howard, especially from afar, is for him to come in and kind of be the dominant rebounder, dominant rim protector that they remember him being from years past. Do you think that's still a possibility for Howard over the body of this contract, the next three seasons, or even next year? Does he still have that kind of dominance left in the tank?
Absolutely. From an overall rim protection and rebounding standpoint, the one thing you're going to have to watch, he doesn't get the block totals that he used to get. And that's related to his, you know, lack of springs, the issue we talked about earlier. But by and large, he can still be a dominant defensive player. You know, you look at some of the games he played against the Warriors in the playoffs. There are times that even against, you know, Andrew Bogut, Draymond Green, a pretty physical team, that he sealed off the interior, grabbed a ton of rebounds, kept the Rockets in the game. From a physical standpoint, you know, he could still be big on that end. The question is, how you manage his minutes so that he doesn't peak too early. One of the things that you know, you've probably noticed on NBA Twitter over the past couple of years, the Rockets fans had a hashtag called Playoff Dwight, and the reason the Rockets fans came up with this Playoff Dwight is because in playoff games or bigger regular season games, you would have him come out with a, you know, a level of intensity to where he would dominate a game. You know, I think back to the 2014-2015 season, you know, even though he missed over half the year with that knee condition, as I was explaining earlier, that zapped some of his explosiveness. In the game 6 of the second round, when the Rockets came back from 3-1 to, you know, beat the Clippers in LA, eventually forced it to game 7, which they won in Houston, Dwight Howard, in that big elimination comeback in LA, put up 21 and 20, completely outplayed DeAndre Jordan on both ends of the floor. And so you know, when he wants to prove a point, he absolutely, even without the shot blocking, can still control a game defensively. He's very strong, but above all that, he has a very high basketball IQ, especially defensively. You know, in spite of some of these frustrating lapses we see, he's a very smart guy. He knows where to be. He knows how to, you know, conserve his energy and do the spots where you can. The main thing is going to be making sure that he doesn't come out too hard, talking from a game to game, week to week, month to month level, because I'm sure after the beating he's taken in the press this offseason and now going to his fourth team in 5 years, he's going to want to come out and play hard for his hometown, his new fans. And so you want to make sure that come January, come February, that, you know, he doesn't have a flare up of the knee or the back, or that, you know, he just doesn't get worn out in general. So I think it's going to be how to, you know, manage him. It's a marathon, not a sprint. You know, maybe that's playing him 25 to 30 minutes a night, but just something that, you know, when the games get bigger in February, March, April, and the playoffs, that he still has enough left in the tank to give you that hashtag playoff Dwight.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting to manage his body, number one. I think one of the encouraging factors of this signing, having him to come to Atlanta, is Mike Budenholzer. Budenholzer's been very, very willing to give guys rest, to really manage minutes, almost to the point of a detriment, where me and other people in sort of the Hawks Twitter realm have been really kind of critical of Budenholzer for not tightening his rotations in the playoffs.
Yeah.
He's always a rest first, players first, you know, health management first kind of coach, which I think is going to play very well for Dwight. I think I agree with you mostly in the early stages of the season. Dwight could be a little bit antsy, could be a little bit possibly willing to overextend himself a little bit, but I think Budenholzer will have a tight eye on that, especially early on, because I'm sure he's going to anticipate the exact same thing that you were saying, that Dwight's going to be looking to make a really good first impression.
Yeah, and that was a huge point of contention on Rockets Twitter throughout the year. Dwight always wants to set an example, and there were a couple of games I can think of when things went really poorly for them. There was a game right before the All-Star break that they got beat by 30 by Portland. Well, actually, they didn't get beat by 30. They were down by 30-plus at home, ended up making it like a 15-point game in garbage time. But Dwight played 42 minutes in that game, in which they basically lost by 30 at home. And, you know, they asked him about it after the game. They asked Bickerstaff, and basically Dwight wanted to set an example of, you know, even when you're losing, you know, you don't quit, you fight through that. And, you know, on paper, that's admirable. But at the same time, you're talking about a 30-year-old center in his, you know, 12th season with no knee and back issues. Why are you letting this guy play for, 40-plus minutes in that kind of scenario, or any game for that matter? And, you know, that just goes back to the undercurrent with the Rockets, which was J.B. Bickerstaff, a 36-year-old who's, you know, an interim guy in his first year. He's not going to be able to command the respect that a Mike Budenholzer could. And so that's the scenario. You know, it is a wait and see. But if you want to buy in on Dwight, that's why you can believe that he has a better chance of success in Atlanta in 2016, 2017 than he did in Houston this past year.
Yeah, that's just something that would absolutely never happen in Atlanta under Budenholzer. I can't remember a time where anybody in his rotation has played more than 40 minutes in a game, other than like a double overtime contest. Stuff just doesn't happen in Atlanta.
Yeah.
He just won't play anybody like that. I think he's from that Spurs mold, that Popovich mold, where he's just not going to do it. And I think it might even be even further with Dwight, to where he might have like a legitimate minutes cap. They won't say that, I'm sure. It's not early on, but I would not be shocked if he was playing in that 28 to 30 minute range.
That's what I think too. The model for Dwight should be Tim Duncan, in my opinion, because if you go back to Tim Duncan, and again, I'm not saying they're the same player, certainly Tim Duncan's a lot smarter of an overall player, especially on the offensive end. His game is much more diverse. But Duncan had fairly serious knee issues around the same time that Dwight is now, his age 30, 31, 32 seasons. And that's when the Spurs cut him back to, you know, around 30 minutes a game, give or take. And that's what prolonged his career, you know, basically playing until 40. And so I think that's exactly what Dwight needs, because the biggest aspect of his decline, you know, there's this national narrative with the way things went in Orlando, which Dwight will accept that was his fault. And then the stuff that the Lakers fans put on him, there's this narrative of Dwight Mayer anytime something goes wrong. Really, that's not what happened in Houston. What happened in Houston was just the physical decline and him kind of struggling to adjust to this new reality. And so, is Atlanta the place for him to accept that? And yeah, as you were saying, Budenholzer out of the Spurs mold, there are no guarantees, but if there's a place that Dwight could succeed at this point in his career, I think this is it.
Yeah, I agree with you on that. One thing before we move off of the health stuff, Dwight gave a very interesting quote to the Atlanta Journal-Constitution this week. He said, and I quote, "My back hasn't been an issue, and I don't think I'll ever have an issue out of my back for the rest of my career." I'll let you speak to that as well. I personally kind of raised my eyebrows on that because I think we all know that his back's been an issue. He had back surgery, for instance. I mean, back surgery for anybody in the NBA is a big deal. Back surgery for a big man who relies on athleticism is an even bigger deal. And I think we've all kind of agreed that he has never been the same physical player since then. Obviously, there have been peaks, as you mentioned, a couple of them in the playoffs and certain times where he's been able to turn things on. But what's your reaction to Howard saying that his back quote hasn't been an issue, and I don't think I'll ever have an issue out of my back for the rest of my career?
I wouldn't say he's outright lying because it may not be a situation where his back is hurting him. It may be that he's just going out there and, he doesn't recognize the difference because, he's not actively in pain. But from a practicality standpoint, from an observer, yeah, it's a big deal. He's never quite regained what he had in his Orlando days. The other thing too, though, it could be just semantics because it's not just the back. Part of it's the knee too. He did recover quite nicely from the back surgery, not quite to the Orlando level, but there was a big decline. His first year after back surgery was that awkward year in Los Angeles, and then he was a better player. His numbers did perk up across the board. The first year in Houston relative to his 1 year in LA. And then what happened starting his second year in Houston was the cartilage issues in his knees, which if you read the stories from back then, we never got a clear description from the Rockets. They just called it swelling, edema in his knees. But did a couple of interviews with Yahoo, I believe, and Dwight said that basically, the cartilage was wearing down, and at one point he referred to it as bone on bone, which of course in sports is always kind of a red flag.
Not ideal, yeah, for sure.
Yeah, and so you never had him complain about it this past year. It didn't, it didn't cost him games the way it did in 2014, 2015 when he missed half a year. But I think the combination of the back and the knee, it clearly took a toll on his explosiveness. And so when I read those quotes from Dwight, I thought two things. I thought one, semantics, it may, maybe it's he thinks of it more as the knee than the back. And secondly, maybe he's referring to the fact that he's just not actively in any pain, which is good. Of course he'll go out and play if he's if he's feeling good and if he's if he feels that he can do everything he used to do, more power to him. A confident Dwight is going to give you the best version of Dwight Howard. But from a neutral observer, whatever it is, whether it's the back, the knee, mental, he's not the same guy he was 3 years ago. He can still be effective, but he's got to come to grips with, his new body and what those limitations are. And maybe he doesn't want to admit it to the press, but I hope behind closed doors, with Budenholzer and the Hawks training staff, that he's a little more that he's a little more forthcoming with everything.
Yeah, I totally agree. Without getting too deep into, we could probably talk about specifics all day long. I do have an overall question on Dwight that I've kind of been asking everybody, and that is, what do you see as Dwight Howard's ceiling at this point? Given the age, given the system, everything we talked about at this point, what do you think his ceiling is both for this year and over the body of a 3 year contract? What do you think that's ceiling looks like in Atlanta?
I would say 14 and 12. I would say let him focus on being the defensive anchor, and you're looking at a double-digit rebounds type guy scoring on offense. I think that Budenholzer and the Hawks are too smart to, try and make him that much of a focal point to where he gets back to his 18 to 20 points per game days. I think the goal is to try and keep a level expectation with Dwight because I think it's dangerous if, say he gets off to a big stretch of 20 and 10 games and all of a sudden he starts thinking that he's the guy that he was 3 and 4 years ago when he was a legitimate MVP candidate. Honestly, I think that's dangerous because I don't think he's physically capable of doing that, and I think that's setting you up for conflict down the road. I think really the goal for him is hopefully to be a second or third option at this stage in his career. You know, let Paul Millsap do the vast majority of the work down low, and let him be more of a complement. Try and get him out of the pick and roll game with the perimeter players as much as you can. But yeah, just sell him on being that, the role that Houston fans have longed for over the past years. If you could just get him to accept being the Tyson Chandler or DeAndre Jordan, and of course now Tyson Chandler's kind of gone over the hill.
Yeah, I don't think you want that now, but yeah, I understand.
Yeah, but you know, a year or two ago when, you know, Chandler had some great years in Dallas, that was one of the things that Houston fans really wanted, especially in the regular season. And so I think that's the real key is to, you know, I don't think you want him, even if he could, to score more than 15 a game. One other just little thing I would watch with Dwight. God, if he can just get his free throws back up to 55% or
that
so.
That was my next question.
Yep. It would make such a big deal because his first 2 years in Houston, he shot about 55%. And while you would have the occasional hackage white, I wouldn't say it was debilitating to the team. Actually, you know, in 2014, 2015, when the hacking really started, you know, they hacked Josh Smith, another former Hawk, more than they did, a lot more success than they did with Dwight. And then this past year, I don't know what it was. I like to think that was just the, you know, kind of emotional discord. There was a lot of stuff going on with Dwight. His percentage just fell off from being a 55% guy to really from like the turn of January onward, pretty much all of 2016, he shot like in the 30s. And that's just unacceptable. That's to the level where Hacka, you know, can be a detriment to your offense. And, you know, it's a small sample size. I'm hopeful that he'll turn it around in Atlanta. But it's a big thing to watch because if he's at 55%, you can live with it. Hacka isn't going to, you know, overwhelm you. But if he's in the 30s, it absolutely becomes a thing where, you know, you don't want to play him in the final 6 minutes of the fourth quarter. Well, at least until the final 2 minutes, because teams are just going to foul him.
Yeah, absolutely. I think Hawks fans, we've been hearing from a lot of them. Since the signing, and Howard's posted a few videos, he has a shooting coach here in Atlanta, where I personally think the stroke is looking better. At the same time, I'm quick to point out to most people that I think it's all mental with Dwight. I was going to ask you if you agree, and it sounds like you do, that it's more in his head than anything else. But I will say that his form looks better. It looks smoother than I think I've ever seen it. In these videos, again, these are videos shot in empty gym with a shooting coach, so I'm very skeptical.
Right, but you know, he always shot 80% in practice. You know, the Rockets kept stats on this, and he was always 80% plus in practice,
which is just wild. But yeah, I agree. I mean, I think 55% is a great baseline. If you can get that, you'll take it. I mean, it's not going to be fun necessarily to watch because he's still going to get hacked sometimes. But if you, as you mentioned last year, I think he shot 48.9 for the season, and it was below that, as you mentioned, after the All-Star break, and that's going to be ugly for the Hawks, especially for a team that, you know, this is a team that's already going to be offensively challenged a lot in my mind this year. Given that I think Howard is a downgrade from Horford offensively in his current state, I'm with you all the way that I think Howard's best role is as a defensive rebounding specialist at this point. So to see that already, if he struggles that much at the line, it's going to be a rough, rough year for the Hawks. One fit question. For all the negativity from people around here, myself included to some extent, I would ask you, isn't Paul Millsap kind of the best basketball fit possible next to Howard right now?
Yeah, I think he's a really good fit. The thing you want next to Dwight is spacing. Where he really shined, there's a reason Houston's been trying to acquire a true stretch four for years. It's kind of ironic that they acquired Ryan Anderson right after losing Dwight Howard, because Ryan Anderson was the guy they tried to pair next to Dwight for so many years. And of course, that's, you know, one reason is because Ryan Anderson was the stretch four next to Dwight in Orlando. And that was when Dwight had his most success. So yeah, I think going, you know, you look at the power forwards when Dwight's been happy, Terrence Jones, his first couple of years in Houston before injuries took over, he was a guy that could play in the perimeter. He could pass. Donatas Mata-Yunus before his back surgery, he was a guy, shot well from three, could move the ball. And then, of course, Ryan Anderson in Orlando, that was the dream fit. Those two fit like a glove. And so, and of course, even Josh Smith, you know, Josh didn't really start next to Dwight that often in Houston, but they played a lot together. Announcers pointed out the AAU connection roughly 600 times a game.
Oh, absolutely. We've heard that forever. So, yes.
Yeah. But they did fit well together because Josh became, a close to average 3-point shooter. He's still Josh. He takes too many of them, but, he became a close to average 3-point shooter in Houston. And so the main thing you look for Dwight is floor spacing and creativity. That's what seems to work best for him going through all the years. And so, yeah, Paul Millsap, at least on paper, I like that fit, somebody that can play in space, someone that can create from the perimeter, because you've got to give Dwight room to play off the ball inside. That's the biggest thing, because, you don't want to dump it down into Dwight. What you want to do for Dwight on offense is allow him to make plays off the ball, the lob game, the offensive rebound. And so the way you do that, you don't need your power forward to be exclusively tied down to the low block. And so having Millsap able to do things in space, I'd say it's encouraging.
Absolutely. And I think I just had a Josh Smith flashback that was had some PTSD there. But
sorry, man. I know the Atlanta fans probably didn't enjoy that. But
It's funny. I actually was in the same high school class as both Josh and Dwight and saw them play a lot of AAU basketball. So you're speaking my language on that one.
Yeah.
Before we wrap this thing up, just one kind of more general question about Dwight. And really, it's kind of a two-parter. First off, is Houston better off with Dwight? What is the post Dwight era look like for the Rockets? And secondly, if all things were equal, say if D'Antoni wasn't the head coach, etc., would you have wanted to invest a 3-year contract in Howard at this point at the number that the Hawks paid?
Not for Houston. I think it's a decent deal for Atlanta. It can work. I'd be a little nervous about the third year, but the dollar value, I do think he can still, especially in this cap era, be worthy of a $20+ million contract, especially if you're able to get to the playoffs and get into bigger games where that, hashtag playoff white version can kind of take effect. I wouldn't have done it for Houston just because I just don't see him being willing to accept the role that we've talked about throughout this show with Houston. I don't think he and James Harden had a terrible relationship. It wasn't as bad as, many in the national media or the bloggers played it up to be. He and Harden had different personalities. Harden, of course, is more of the stereotypical NBA lifestyle. Dwight, Dwight is not exactly a hit the clubs guy off the court. He's got his exotic animals. In Houston, he lived on basically a ranch in Richmond, which is a suburb about 30 minutes outside the city. He doesn't exactly live the NBA lifestyle. And so, there was always kind of this, awkward undercurrent. I wouldn't say that there was turmoil, but, they weren't always on the same page. And so then you add these system fits on top of it. And I just didn't see them being able to patch it back together, especially because, with Dwight in Houston, I think he always thought back to the initial press conference when he was brought in to be the 1B to James Harden's 1A, and he was on the billboard outside Toyota Center. The two of them were, basically on the same level. And right now, that's not the case anymore. James Harden is a clearly better player. That's not a shot at Dwight Howard. That's just the natural course of evolution, Dwight being 30-plus years old. But I just didn't see it likely that for Dwight to accept that role in the same city, the same locker room where he was, a star for a couple of years, and he envisioned himself being a bigger piece of the picture. This past year, all the chemistry problems with the Rockets, the Rockets still had decent talent. They were just the classic case of a team that was less than the sum of its parts. For whatever reason, the chemistry just didn't work. And so for the Rockets moving forward, it was clear to me that they needed to build around James Harden moving forward, put together a team that, could best complement his game. And in some senses, Dwight could fit, because certainly with James Harden and Ryan Anderson, you'd love to have an interior anchor like that to kind of help you out in the defensive glass and some of the potential defensive issues. But just from a personality standpoint, I didn't think that he was going to be a good fit with James moving forward. And that's a shame because personally, I love Dwight. He was great and forthcoming with the media. He works hard. He's really good in the Houston community. But, what's best for the Rockets moving forward, the best chance for them to contend is to build around James Harden, to hope that, that James Harden gets back to that MVP form that he had in 2014, 2015. And at this point, it was just hard for me to see Dwight kind of fitting into that blueprint.
Yeah, absolutely. And hopefully, I think Hawks fans can hear a lot of positives in everything that you've said. And Rockets fans can take solace in the fact that, they still have James Harden and can still move on and, rebuild without Dwight. I appreciate you coming on, Ben. And it was a lot of fun to talk about Howard and how he'll fare in Atlanta and how things went in Houston. And hopefully, it'll work out for both parties.
Sure thing. I think there's a good chance. And yeah, I wish you all the best.
Thanks a lot.
Sure thing.
I thought that was a great chat with Brad. He had a lot of insight on the Hawks and also seemed to have a very level-headed expectation for what's reasonable with Dwight Howard in the coming years. For those of you Houston listeners, I hope it was as therapeutic for you guys as it was for me. Because watching Dwight leave, it's all a little jarring. Because as I said to lead off the show, it's amazing to think at how quickly this all unraveled. As we sat here this time in July 2015, I don't think anyone expected this. You know, we knew he would opt out because it's financially beneficial to him to get a new deal in this higher cap environment. But the vibes couldn't have been more positive. The Rockets had won 56 games and were coming off a Western Conference Finals run. Dwight was a monster in the postseason in both of his first 2 years with the team. He had done great things in the community. And so I think Rockets Twitter expected him to be a member of the team for quite a long time. And for it all to unravel that quickly, it's very surprising. And, initially there can be some hard feelings. I understand that. But big picture, I look at this as similar to Tracy McGrady's exit from the Rockets. You know, there were some harsh things said. Tracy McGrady at that point in his career, he didn't want to accept his physical limitations. And it's easier for competitors with a lot of pride to blame usage, if only they were used in a different way, if maybe the coach or the other players had a little more trust in them. It's easier to do that than just accept that your body isn't what it used to be. And it's easy for us as fans to sit and blame and to say, well, it's obvious that Dwight at in the 30s is not what he was 5 years ago. But part of what makes Dwight Howard great is the confidence. And to expect a competitor to realize it all that quickly is asking a little much. With McGrady, I think both sides said some harsh things then. And within 5 years, both sides had patched it up to where now Tracy McGrady, every time he makes an appearance at Toyota Center, he gets a standing ovation. And people remember all the great things he did with the franchise. And even though it's a little awkward now, I hope we get to a point within a few years that the reception for Dwight is the same way. Because he was a class act in the locker room. He was great in the community. He brought some great memories to Rockets fans, brought them to their first Western Conference Finals in almost 20 years. He was the biggest factor in doing that. It's 21 and 20 in Game 6 against the Clippers. And so even if things are a little awkward now, I hope that all of you remember the good times and, give him the benefit of the doubt. Because in July 2013, he gave Houston the benefit of the doubt. So if we want Houston to be considered a good destination for free agents, I think that fans need to be wary of how they treat Dwight. Remember that he did a lot of good for this franchise, and let's all wish him well in Atlanta. With that, I'll sign off. It's been another edition of Locked On Rockets. I hope you guys enjoyed it. You can reach the show at Locked On Rockets on Twitter. If you're interested in advertising with us, you can reach us at lockedonrockets@gmail.com. I'm Ben Dubose, and I'll see y'all tomorrow.
Ace is the place with the helpful hardware, folks.
It's Ace's biggest LED light bulb sale of the year. Right now, buy one, get one free on our best-selling LED light bulbs. Our 4-pack of LED bulbs is $9.99, and our 2-pack of LED floodlights is only $12.99. Buy one, get one free. There's no limit on how much you can save, so stock up now. Hurry in. Buy one, get one free on long-lasting 10-year LED bulbs, now through Monday, only at your neighborhood Ace. See participating stores for details.